Kind of wondering what this will look like when it comes out black and white. To me, it's like a murky brown. Like I made a bad cup of tea or something. But who knows? Sup kids, how are you doing today? I have a small story to tell as we start this episode off and I get comfortable. I moved everything around and this was a mistake, I feel. Because now everything feels kind of wrong. You know, I can't put my finger on it, but it just feels, things just feel kind of wrong. Maybe the camera angle's a little bit different for those of you watching on film, but either way, I'm going to dive right in. So I've got a small story to tell. I remember, this was back when I was on Twitter. I was on Twitter a while back, and now I'm not on Twitter. And I refuse to call it whatever it's been called now, because it's ridiculous, and the rebranding effort is some sort of Faustian mythological tale of just hubris. But someone asked for, I want to say, advice or information which you'd been given, critique someone had given you early on in life or in your art career, and how that affected the things you were doing as you went along the way. And then I had a recent experience where I was describing content types and photography types, and we talked a little bit about this with Martin and Amy. We were having a discussion of essentially just different approaches to the same platform. They just recently joined YouTube and they just got into doing it, and they're looking at content and seeing what's successful and seeing what they can do to emulate it but give it their own twist. And I appreciate that, you know. I appreciate them as people. I appreciate the work that they're doing, and I enjoy their videos, but it's not the way I'd approach it. I mean, evidently, this is not the way I approach it. I leave in mistakes. I unedit. The only time I really make a cut, if I have a guest on, is if there's a technical failure. And you've seen these things. And that's something which I bring to most things I do. My brother gave me the comment on the podcast about how I just post everything I make. And yes, this is pretty much true. I do just post everything I make. I don't post all at the same time. Sometimes I drip feed it out, and whether it's good or bad or the best work I've ever made or, you know, okay, somewhat subpar, it doesn't really affect me posting it out there, because I'm posting it for conceptual reasons. I'm posting it for myself. I'm catharting myself. You've got to be careful how you pronounce that one. I'm embracing a level of catharsis with the things which I do and the things which I make. And that's what's important to me, because I'm concept-led and coping mechanism-led. I always have been, and as I say, you know, that's a whole thing. But I'm going to go back a few steps here. We're going to get back to the point. I mean, we're still on the point, but I'm going to go back to the point. So when I was in university, for those of you who don't know what a uni is, I recently used the word mob and confused many Americans, because I said, "You can catch me on my mob." And they looked at me like, "What? What are you talking about? Are you talking about mobs, gangsters, Italians? What is this mob you speak of?" I don't know why they said like that. The one they would have been like, "What is this mob you're talking about? Like, none of that, Graham. You're not using the words which you're meant to use. What is a mob?" Anyway, either way, it's mobile. You know, as I say, I got to be. So when I went to uni, I went to uni, and during the course, because it was a photography and film course, conceptual and contemporary lens media, course which no longer exists, which means my degree is defunct, as I have said many times on this course. We have critique sessions, and critique sessions are okay. I don't hate them. I quite enjoy them. I like looking at work and encouraging people to continue that work and keep going. I think critique sessions are good for that. It's a lot like a retro. If you've ever worked in any industry which has retrospectives or sprint planning, a retro is only as successful as the person who is running the retrospective, because the whole idea about them is to get people to engage, to discuss what went well, what didn't go well, and how to resolve that. And get different impressions. And sometimes it can be really eye-opening. Sometimes it can be a real question of, you know, such and such did this and such did this. One of them sees it as positive, one of them sees it as negative, and they come together and they coalesce, and the person running the retro is meant to find some common ground and, you know, figure out something to just to improve that process. So an art retro is meant to somewhat be like that. It's meant to be a group discussion. And if you can't get the group to discuss, then it's redundant. It's a redundant process. Just making sure my microphone's recording. See, I'm going to leave that in. I checked my microphone and I'm going to leave that in. Going to do a double check just here. Pretty sure it says it's recording. Anyway. And I think that's what it's meant to be. That's what it's intended to be. What it actually ends up being is a personal critique of your work by the tutor, because the tutor is the person who's marking you. They're marking your work, therefore you have to impress them. You are weirdly on an artistic course. You're catering to an audience of one. You're not really catering to the wider world, and you're not really catering to anyone anywhere other than the person who's going to give you a grade, because you're heavily reliant on their opinion. Even on our course, we had three or four tutors within our course, and they did, you know, did critiques together. So they thought it was more balanced. They saw it as, well, we're a balanced team. We're a semi-diverse group of people, male and female, different locations, all white because, you know, England. And that's what we did. We sat in a room. We bring our work to show. We put it down and we say, give me your worst, essentially. And there was a couple of instances which really stuck out within my mind. The first one of them was, I remember somebody showing some work which, there were photographs of hospitals. So it was inside I don't know the official term for it. I want to say pediatrics. It was a baby ward. It was a ward where children are born, which, you know, is an interesting subject in itself. It's a fascinating medical process. And they'd gone through and they'd taken these photographs. Now, of course, they could only take these photographs when the place was empty. That's privacy at work. And that's hospitals at work. You're not going to go in when the child's being born and just be snap happy and then try and shove a consent form under a toddler's nose. I don't know why suddenly a toddler... Time moves quicker in this space and time I've created. And they'd been through and these photographs. And they'd taken these wonderful photographs. I thought they were fantastic. They were these black and white, really classy grayscale style photographs with essentially like moodish lighting, because they just used the surgical lights, and it looked great. They were fantastic photos. They were really high quality. I thought the concept was really interesting, and it was significant that the rooms were empty to give you a sense of calm. And that was the impression they were trying to give. It gave you a sense of calm of everything which goes on in these spaces. All these like really dynamic spaces. The screams, the terror, the sweating, the presumably defecating. All of these things which go into bringing human beings into the world like Urukai. And presenting these photographs. And my tutors did not enjoy these photographs. Because one of the tutors said, they remind me of death. They remind me of the death of a child. That's why the rooms are empty. The rooms seem empty and morose, like they're photographing a funeral, like they're photographing a wake, like they've gone in after something terrible has happened. Like almost like an abandoned hospital, like an abandoned place, rather than somewhere which is actively being used and looked after and maintained for the sake of bringing things into the world. And that was their opinion. And we disagreed. As a class, we disagreed. And rather than taking on that interest in this group of 20-year-olds who were saying, well, we don't get that impression at all, they said, no, you're wrong. You're wrong because of the age you are compared to the age they were, which was presumably in their 40s to 60s. They were saying it's because you're the age difference. Now, fair enough. Different people have different opinions when it comes to work. And you take something different from it. I said this a lot throughout this entire podcast. People get different things from different pieces of work. When they looked at it, they saw it as these are very morbid. These are very dark. They're very penitent of the situation, that there's something happened here and it's been cleaned up, and now the aisles are empty and now it's quiet and all that kind of thing. Whereas we saw it as, look at these amazing rooms which are so quiet, waiting to be used. And we were coming at it from two different points of view. Now, of course, the people who thought they were about death and thought they were bad because of that, because they weren't giving the impression the artist had originally intended, are the ones who are in charge of marking. And this is what I'm saying. They're the ones in charge of marking, therefore you have to appease to them. You have to either change your concept or you have to change your photographs. And I always find that incredibly interesting on an art course, that you're told to consider your audience and consider your target and consider your concept and how you push it out into the world, when in reality you are at the behest of whoever is the course leader, because they are the ones who are going to decide your eventual course and grade. And then the other side of that is, there's a secondary story to this. The secondary story to this was, I was in my second year of uni. So I'll break it down for you. On my course, you could do, essentially you could specialize within third year. It was meant to be photography and film, or moving image, if you want to use the official terminology. Photography and film, I'm not going to use the official terminology, I'm not official. Photography and film, and you, in your second and third year, could choose to drop an aspect of that. You could instead choose to focus on one aspect or another. So if you wanted to focus on still image, you could. If you wanted to focus on moving image, you could, which meant you didn't have to explore the studio lighting for photography, and you didn't have to explore the video editing and aspects of things like that, which you did with moving image, which is fair enough. It's a good idea. It's there. So I was in my second year of the course, and I decided to continue both because I really enjoyed both. I enjoyed getting into the nitty-gritty of it all. I liked having this range and this capacity to be able to do both and look into both and dive into them, because as you've seen through the work which I make and through the episodes I make, I'm not a one medium kind of creator. I take the concept which I want to create and then I apply it to the medium, right? And that's how I look at this. And so when I was on this course, I was like, this is great, this is fantastic. And then in the second year, I was kind of leaning more towards moving image. I liked the idea of getting into film and abstract film and art films and all these kinds of things, and really exploring that kind of style of work, as well as narrative. Narrative had taken a big jump in my life of things which I wanted to look at. But I got into this final year review, right? It was my second year. And I was looking at the work I was creating and taking it to my tutors to review and get my final grade and see if they could explain their thoughts or anything like that. And this was before I'd been graded as well. Important to remember that. So this was before I'd been graded. And I went to my review, laid out my work. They'd already seen it at this point, and they didn't like it. They didn't like my work, which is fine. As I say, this is a subjectivity experiment. That's what this is. That's what university art is. It's a subjectivity experiment. They didn't like my work, but they didn't really have a particular problem with my work either, which was the interesting thing. They didn't have a problem with it. They didn't see it and think, no, this is just bad. Like, concept-wise, this is bad. And I did get some positive comments. I got some comments to say, which kind of convinced me to move into moving image more so, was that I seemed more interested in that side of things. I seemed more interested in trying to explain a story within what was going on and the images, the still images I'd created. And therefore, you know, that would be a better path for me. Which, in the end, I guess I kind of agree with. But on the other hand, I got a comment which has stuck with me, and I think I've mentioned it a few times. And the reason I mentioned the Twitter thread is this comment I left on that Twitter thread. Was one of the comments I got was, Graham, you don't seem to understand the fundamentals of photography. Now, bear in mind that this is my second year on this university degree level course where tutors are meant to teach you and explain to you the fundamentals of the thing you're trying to do. And never at any point had they outlined what these fundamentals were. We were just expected to know. Now, I will also say that the images I created for that second year course were all using studio lighting, reasonable DSLR of the time, and staged situations. They followed the basic premises, the basic fundamentals of photography. So I still don't know what that comment means. I still don't understand what that comment means. And anyway, so I got this comment, and I took it to me, and I was like, what am I going to do with this feedback, right? What am I going to do with it? Because it doesn't mean anything. It almost seems like a comment you give someone because you don't feel like you can give a comment. You're saying something because you need to be seen to be saying something. There was nothing in the work which made sense to say I didn't understand. Like, they weren't badly exposed. They weren't out of focus. They were lit. They were clear, I guess is the terminology. And it made me revolt, you know, as it does. As the way my brain is wired, when you insult something, when I create, my first instinct is to just be like, fuck your fundamentals. Fuck everything which is to do with the X, Y, and Z of whatever the situation it is, right? Oh, you made a bad sandwich. Well, fuck your sandwich. To me, a sandwich doesn't need to be two slices of bread with stuff in the middle. I want my sandwich to be round. Sandwiches should be round. Why not? Let's just put it in a round, and I'm not going to serve it flat. I'm going to serve it in a bowl. And my brain instantly goes there. And in many ways, it still does, because there's parts of me which just need to retaliate to that feedback, and this is one of these defining moments which did that. But they told me this, right? And as an adult, I still don't understand the comment, and I still don't understand these things. But why do I bring this up? Why do I come back to this and say these lines again to myself? Now, the reason I shared it on that thread, and the reason I shared it on Twitter at the time, was because we were discussing when you got bad feedback, right? We're discussing when things had discouraged you from doing something. And this did discourage me. It discouraged me from wanting to make still images. It pushed me into moving image, which I explored and I enjoyed. And that was great. You know, it had a positive outcome. But in the same time, it made me feel like, well, my photography work will never be good enough. It'll never be good enough for the people who are going to criticize my photography, because I can't even appease the people who are there to grant me, you know, grades and grant me a path forward. And we were having this nice cathartic moment between artists, especially working class artists on Twitter, where we discussed these situations in arts education which negatively affected us and impacted us in a way where we could have looked for support and we could have done with support. All we really needed, all I needed in that situation, was for my tutors to say, you know, it seems like you struggle with these aspects of the fundamentals. And they didn't do that. They didn't provide that support. Instead, they chose to tell me that, and we moved on. But recently, I was having this conversation, and this is where I come back to Martin and Amy, was I was having this conversation and comparing my photography to my brother's photography. Now, if you don't know, my brother, whilst being a YouTuber now, you know, a vlogger, as he likes to say, is a very talented photographer. He posts a lot of photos which he took whilst he was in New York, and I really enjoyed them, and they look great. You know, they're vivid, colorful, aesthetically pleasing, straight lines, clear, focused, and he puts a lot of time and effort into learning the techniques and the skills which are required to do that. It makes him feel, ooh, pardon me, makes him feel good, makes him feel, you know, like he's doing the thing he wants to be doing, and he's creating the types of image he wants to create. And that's a very key part here. What I don't like about them is that they look a lot like other stuff. Right? They look a lot like a lot of the photography I see of New York. And that's his intention. He's intending to go out and make very specific stylized images inspired by the stuff which he sees. And that's what he enjoys doing. And, you know, more power to him. Whereas my photographs I recently took, and I recently shared some on Instagram, was I had taken some film photographs where I'd used the wrong type of film with the wrong ISO, and I think I'd set my camera up wrong. So essentially, one of the rolls I shot just came out disgusting. If there's no real better way to word this. They came out disgusting in terms of clarity, and they came out disgusting in terms of, you know, just being a standard, fundamentally good photograph. The framing was fine and all this kind of stuff, but it was hard to see. They were just hard to see in the image. But I enjoyed them, right? I looked back through them. I did some mild editing, and I picked the ones which were capable of being viewed online. And that was something which I was very aware of, because as an artist, we have to share a lot of what we do and share out to the world. So I shared the ones which are good enough to be viewed online, and I shared the ones which were bad. I shared the ones which had gone wrong, so to speak, in a story, and some people came back with the feedback, and they were saying, well, actually, I really like these. There's an aesthetic, and there's a vibe to these, and they seem more artistic. And this is what kind of didn't click in my brain, because I'm already very aware of this, but this is what I wanted to talk about today, is when I approach something, when I create something, as I said at the very beginning, I'm approaching it from a concept-first point of view, right? I'm approaching it from an emotional, theatrical sense, where I'm trying to embody an atmosphere and trying to embody something within the viewer. And I don't care about the rest of whatever's going on. I don't care about the technical aspect. I don't care about whether it's, you know, perfectly colored or framed exactly. Because sometimes those mistakes, those rebates, as it were, that's the photography term for the sprockets and the numbers and stuff, all those things add to it. They add to the sense of feeling that you were there, and that it's a person taking a photograph, that mistakes were made to get to that image. That's the sketch lines in my sketches, in my illustrations when they're finished. There's the thumbprints on claymation. It's the lines and the paints which got away from it. Sometimes all of that stuff is more interesting than the painting being created in itself. The journey and the exploration which it took for my brother to get to New York and take this photograph is so interesting. And then the image which is created doesn't interest me at all, but it does interest other people. And that, again, that's applying it to your audience. But it made me think more so about just my approach to learning new things, right? As we said before, that was tracking back the fundamentals of photography. That's tracking back to the way you start something. I was learning at the time. I was trying to find what was right for me, and I was trying to find out how to use all this new tech. I mean, to age myself, when I was going into uni, the first digital SLR cameras, single lens reflex cameras, were being pushed out. The first ones were being heavily utilized. I bought my first camera, which has less megapixels now than my phone camera. That's the age I am. And we were learning all that. We were the first band of photographers and filmmakers who were exposed to that level of digital imagery and accessibility to that level of digital imagery. And the same with film. You know, you get a film camera. What do? Well, you're going to have to learn it. You're going to have to learn these aspects and notions in order to get something, so you don't come out with a black or white square within that. So I was considering that, and I was considering how I pick up things. And I realized that it's not so much that I don't understand the fundamentals of photography, right? I just have a different determination and definition of what the fundamentals of creation are. The fundamentals of creation, to me, are very much the challenge, the process, the story, and the notion which gets me to the end product. Whereas the fundamentals to them were the fully on the technical aspect, fully on technical-based graphic design-led rules, which impacted them, impacted their story, impacted their atmosphere. And to me, that's fascinating. That's a whole thing. And I was thinking about when I start new things, right? My process, and I was trying to think of this, it was my process. I was trying to line down how I go about things. And there is a very simple process I take, which I thought to myself and realized. All right, my process is this. I think of the thing which I want to create, or I'm inspired to create. So I think of the thing which I want to create, and then I try to create it. Doesn't matter what it is, right? Doesn't matter if I'm exploring a new paint, doesn't matter if I'm exploring a new style, doesn't matter if I'm exploring a new process, linocut, clay, felt work, sewing, anything. Whatever it is, I just try it. I get hold of some materials and I try to create it. I did a linocut for Pancake Day, and it was the first time I'd done it. But I bought some lino, I bought a cutting knife, I drew a thing onto it, and then I cut it out. And then I did some printing. It didn't come out amazing, but it came out well enough that I had an image and it was what I created. I learned so much in that first attempt at just trying to do it that I was able to do it again. And the next time I did it, I learned slightly more because I changed slightly what I'd done. And that's what I do. I figure it out. I figure out the first one. And instead, essentially, I intend to fail. First time I try anything. literally, that could be a slogan for me, is I have fully intended to fail the first time, right? It's like you bake a cake, you make a sandwich, I'm going to fail. I know I'm going to fail. And in some ways, I am intending to fail because I'm trying things. I'm experimenting with things. Oftentimes, when I tell people about the first times I've done something, I get told, well, Graham, that's silly. Because you know that's not the right way to do it, right? You've seen tutorials, you've seen these videos, and you watch this. Or I could tell, why didn't you come to me? I could have told you that that's the wrong way to do it. Because I don't want to, right? Because I don't. Because the fun is the process. The fun is diving in and going, oh my God, this cake turned out bloody awful. Or, oh my God, why is this paint not adhering to this canvas? All of those things come into play. And I'm gonna figure it out. I'm going to intend to fail. Because it's all information. It's all adding to my skills as I go. And then, what do I do when I fail? I fail, and then I take that failure, and then I go learn some stuff. I think, why did this go wrong? What went wrong with this whole process? What did I struggle with? I perform essentially a micro retrospective on myself. I get very insular, and I say, right, where did this go wrong? Why are we struggling with this? This should be simple. We've seen other people do it, and we have try to imitate what we've seen other people do. Where did this go wrong? And I read about it and I learn some bits and I get involved with that, you know? And it does. It helps because it suddenly informs things. People will say, oh, you know, you're doing this, and then, you know, there'll be a tutorial about something or other, and that will inform the things I've done. And because I have real world examples of that failure, I can fully relate to myself. I'm like, oh, that's why my knife kept slipping when I was doing the lino cut. That's why when I baked that cake, it didn't rise exactly as it should. The first time I made bread, right? First time I used my bread maker, I didn't make the recipe, which was the most basic. I instead threw a bunch of garlic salt into that recipe because I thought, garlic bread, that sounds fantastic. Let's do that. Let's try to make garlic bread. My bread didn't rise. Didn't rise at all. Ended up with a brick. I ended up with a cakey brick. Do you know why? Because garlic and yeast don't mix. And that's why when they make garlic bread, they put garlic butter on it instead of putting the garlic into the bread. I didn't know that. I learned that briefly afterwards. Right? And that's how I did it. I learned back and I went and I was like, oh, cool. But I learned that. And then I learned about, you know, having those things involved with one another and having those things overlap one another. Click record on that again because that's stopped recording. This is a longer podcast than usual. And I apply that to what I've learned to improve my initial attempt because then I'm also just creating what I want to create. I get in there and I'm trying to make the thing I want to make rather than following a tutorial exactly, following a new lesson plan or anything like that. And from that point on, I can go grow, evolve, and let the concept lead the creation process. If I'd done it the other way around, if I'd made a loaf of bread that I wanted to make, that's great, but now I have a loaf of bread that I don't really want, which is redundant. It's waste. It's just waste of my time and my concept for that thing, because I'm going to have to fit my concept into that loaf. Lino cut. I could have downloaded a design. I could have made it in a way which was sold to me. I could have bought a pack with pre-printed designs on the lino cut to learn the cutting technique. But I don't want those lino cuts. I'm going to end up with a bunch of stamps I can't use. What am I getting at? What I'm getting at is this. When you attempt anything new, be it art, creation, building, logical things, I think you should go into it with a bout of, this first one is a test. Like pancakes. This first one's a test. This first one is me just trying something. Got a new technique, gonna try it. Got a new hobby, just gonna try it. Not even gonna watch a video, not gonna do anything. Just gonna try it. Making something gives your muscle memory, your brain, a challenge. And as soon as you embrace that challenge with the idea that I could fail, what you're left with, it comes out a bit better, right? It comes out like, oh, it probably didn't go as bad as I thought it would go. I don't need your fundamentals for the first draft. Nobody does. The fundamentals are that you wanted to try it in the first place. The fundamental is that, you know, you're embracing a process which allows you to learn something and do something and create something. You're engaging cathartic process rather than engaging a technical process. And then after that first failure, you get to sit back and say, oh, hey, did that first fail, it didn't go exactly how I wanted. Now I do a little bit of learning, and then I'll be able to make that first failure into something more successful, or figure out why I need to adapt my plan. My reaction to being told it is fuck your fundamentals. Which I now disagree with. Kind of. It's a good slogan. Fuck your fundamentals. Instead, just recognize that different people have different fundamentals. I don't care about the technical aspects of those things. I know how to create an image. I know how to create a standard, equalized photographic image. I know how to make a loaf of plain bread. But I'm going to continue and use those skills to continue to make conceptually led, cathartic images, creations, loaves, which I actually want to make, and build that knowledge base slowly. I fully encourage you all to go out, try something, do something new. Just be prepared to fail. And let me know in the comments below, you know, what are you trying to fail at today? And maybe we can all discover some tips and tricks. My main tip is fuck your fundamentals. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.